This morning we met and had a nice meal together. We saw so many of our children gathered, and we want you to know, if you're sitting with a baby and or a child and they're wiggly or they're making noise, we just are so glad of that. And we want you to not worry about that. We want you to rejoice in that. Many of us here would love to feel our wiggling babies beside us one more time and hear that noise. So when we hear your children, we want to just celebrate that. When we see your little boys, little girls walk in, we're happy with that. And I just saw one fella said, if you want mine for the hour, I'll bring them right over. But I know what it's like to have a wife who arrives at church looking a bit like she's been in a very strong wind for a long time, getting the kids ready. And we just appreciate it so much. But so if you have your children, just hug them, and we just love you so much. It's a great day. So many families here. And we just ask the Lord to bless you and bless you and bless you again today. It is a happy day when you think in terms of the Sunday that we think of as being closest in the yearly calendar to the Sunday when Jesus was actually raised from the dead. And we do remember the death and resurrection of Jesus every day of our life and every Sunday of the week, of the year. But today it does feel, because it's the time of the year, that it was on a day something like last Friday that Jesus was taken to the cross. And it was on a day like yesterday that people sat wondering what would become of the promises of God. And it was on a morning like this morning that people went to a tomb and found it unoccupied. So it means a lot. I love the story of the resurrection in Mark. I love it. I love it partially because it says something about the way things have always been. In John chapter 19, as you end there, Jesus is taken down from the cross, and Joseph and Nicodemus take the body of Jesus to the tomb. And Nicodemus has bought a remarkable amount of spices, and Joseph and Nicodemus get cloth and spices, and they wrap the body of Jesus for burial. And on Sunday morning, the women go back to fix it. That tells me a lot about how things have always been. It's already been done once. But the women get up early with their cloth and their spices to go again. And as they walk along, they're wondering, who will roll the stone away? Because the stone would have been 6, 7, 8 feet in diameter, rolled in a trough, down a stone trough. Who would move it? I think the women probably would have gotten it done. They're going to do a job that is not a pretty job. They're going to, out of love and respect, walk into a tomb where a man has been dead now into his third day, where his body will be lifeless and rigid, and they will pick him up, and they will hold him, and they will turn him, and they will dip their cloth in the spices, and they will wrap his body, and they will try with those strips of cloth and with the ointments that are available, they will try to obscure the visual image of death, and they will try to obscure with those pungent spices the sensory impact of that death. It is an act of kindness and respect and honor that will only in some minor ways forestall the eventual disintegration of that body. So much so that in the Holy Land in those days, it was customary when a man died, for a year after that person died, for that oldest son to go to the tomb and collect the bones and put them in a bone box, an ossuary box. That in a year that work of decay would have been done, even with all of the spices and all of the cloths. It would have been done. But because a tomb would have been a receptacle for more than one body, it was out of courtesy to the next users that you would do that, I guess. So they'd come to do this work, which is a work as old as man itself, I guess. Pyramids were built to obscure the fact of death in the face of it. Some of you have been to Dallas to see the exhibit of King Tut. And for all of the lively artifacts, near as I can tell, Tut's still dead. And when they go to the tomb, they find that this common ritual, this ritual of respect, is now going to be interrupted in a remarkable way. Because the one who is dead is gone. And the one who is there, the angel from heaven, says he is risen. And he is giving orders. And he is planning to meet you. And now the story continues. There has been a cross. And there has been a burial. And now there has been a resurrection. And it changes everything. And these last words from Mark, and I don't know exactly everything there is to know about the end of the Gospel of Mark. It looks like something's missing. Maybe somebody's tried to fill it in the what's been added. I'm not even going to go into all that. I don't want to fight that battle. I like the fact that it ends where it ends in the most reliable, oldest text, with people just being bewildered. Because at times I think I run too fast into the rest of the story. And don't stand in the presence of an open tomb where there had been a crucified man. I don't stand there quite amazed enough, quite bewildered enough, quite stunned enough at how this changes everything. Because in my own life, so many of my own efforts are made to obscure my own fear of death, the fact of death, the fact of my mortality. I live in a world that Ernst Becker talked about when he wrote the book, The Denial of Death. How that so many of the things that drive us and so many of the things that move our society, our cosmetics and our clothing and our pleasures, our entertainment, our alcohol and our drugs and our sex, it's all done at such a pitch and such a frenzy, all seeking to try to obscure the fact that we are mortal, that we have a life sentence, that we are heading toward the grave. And that's the good news. And somehow, in the presence of all of that, against the picture of that impending darkness and doom, we grab our cloth and pick up our spices, and we busy ourselves wrapping one another and anointing ourselves so that we do not see the sight of death and don't catch its stench. It is as if all of the world is involved in the practice of the mortuary sciences. So to obscure the fact, the impact, the presence, the ugliness of death itself, and now the tomb is empty. And it looks as if we could spend our time doing something else. What if there's life after death? What if Death doesn't get the last word. What if you don't end up all your conversations with, well, he went to school and he became an educated man, he became a great man, he became a philanthropic man, he lived a great life, had a great family, and he died. That sort of trajectory, lift off, splash down. That's it. It's almost too good to be true, you see. Standing there in the presence of that empty tomb. That all of the world was changed in just that moment. If you think about it a little bit more deeply, you think that the two great works of that weekend come together. They flow together. Jesus on the cross pulls the teeth of sin by the offering of His own sinless self. He offers all of those who would come to Him forgiveness. The one who knew no sin became sin so that we might enjoy the grace of God. That now the one who has gone to the cross has been lifted and is at the right hand of God interceding for us. Sin has been overwhelmed. And so we no longer live in this world as ones who are dogged all of our life by our sin. That sin is chasing us and chasing us and chasing us, and shame is following us and following us and following us. And everything we've done, every imperfection, every false word, every false attitude, every false act, every anger, every impropriety, it all follows us and it accumulates. And it is as if there's this giant boulder that accumulates all of the things of our life, and it just rolls toward us. It just rolls toward us. It just comes. And Jesus went to the cross to give us forgiveness and release and relief from the burden of all that. And as we're going through our life being chased by all of the sin and all of the guilt and the shame, in front of us, we see, in front of us there is this impending death, this impending mortality, and it is coming to us at a pace, and we are caught between our mortality and our guilt and shame. And there between those two great facts of our life, we're caught and we're helpless and we're hopeless. And what do? And Jesus goes to the cross and wipes out what is behind us. And He goes to the tomb and He rises and He wipes out what is before us. And we stand in a world and there's not one thing in the far rear horizon that will harm us. And there's not one thing in the far forward horizon that will harm us. And we are free in the morning of the resurrection. We are free. And Jesus invites us. He calls us to Himself, to come to Him in that space where the sin has been destroyed and death has been destroyed. And He asks us to sing the old songs. Where is your victory? Death, where is your sting? Where is your victory? Where is your sting? And it really ought to be sung, as we've said already, in the tune of that song that every child is born knowing. Na 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 na. So then the women, bewildered and afraid, step out into a world that has been radically changed. Our hope this morning is that this is a world into which we step with great joy. With great joy. in the world of nice hats and Easter baskets and clothes that really look nice. On a day like this, Jesus Christ would come to us today, and He would stand with His scars in His hands and in His side and in His feet, and He would ask, "Now what are you going to do with this new life that I give you by virtue of the cross and the resurrection? If I give you a life where you have been forgiven, what will you do? And if I give you a life where you now understand that you are indestructible in the face of death, what will you do? What will you dare to dream? What ministry would you dare begin? Who would you ever dare to be afraid to say my name to for the sake of their life? What country would you not go to? What danger would you be unwilling to bear, knowing that there is no sin that can touch you? There is no death that can end you. The Lord Christ, I believe, would call us to great joy and great hope and also great courage, so that we might go forward into our world in the same way that He went forward into His, knowing that even if the death that would stare you in the face would be one you would like to avoid, even if you must suffer it, there is a morning coming when you walk free and alive. So this morning, as a church, we are called to step in to the joy of the resurrection, into the freedom of the sacrifice of the cross, and to live with nothing behind us that can harm us, and nothing in front of us that can end us. To God be the glory. Let's stand and sing together.